The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Well, we made it to a Thursday. Most of us, anyway. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com on a bit of a delay on Progressive Voices, where we're now heard at 6 p.m. Eastern. There's so much going on in the news. The latest, brand new, hot off the presses news. Hold on, let me get this open for you. Donald Trump plans to declare that the Iran nuclear deal is not in the national interest. There's been a lot of talk of this Iran deal in recent days. Secretary of Defense Mattis was testifying before, I want to say the House Intelligence Committee, but it might have been a different committee. He was asked by Senator Angus King whether or not we should stay in the deal. And Mattis said, yes, he believes we should. Remember when Donald Trump said he would defer to his generals? Well, it seems it is as if he is not. From the Washington Post, reported by Ann Gearin, President Trump plans to announce next week that he will decertify the international nuclear deal with Iran, saying it is not in the national interest of the United States, and kicking the issue to a reluctant Congress. People briefed on an emerging White House strategy for Iran said, well, today. The move would mark the first step in a process that could eventually result in the resumption of U.S. sanctions against Iran, which would blow up a deal limiting Iran's nuclear activities that the country reached in 2015 with the U.S. and five other nations. That's the important part to note. It's not just a deal between the U.S. and Iran. There are five other nations involved in this, and he's going to torpedo the whole thing. So back to the article. Trump is expected to deliver a speech tentatively scheduled for October 12th, laying out a larger strategy for confronting the nation it blames for terrorism and instability throughout the Middle East. I don't know about you, but I don't trust this guy as far as I could throw him, let alone to figure out what to do with regards to Iran. So this is just one of a number of stories that are, you know, atop the news today. So I come on the air each day and I try to figure out in the few minutes that I have to speak with you before we move on to the rest of the news of the day, what to talk about. And I've got a list that just off the top of my head, I started writing down as I tried to figure out what to talk about. It could be Trump, you know, in Puerto Rico, which I'm still just grossly offended by, or his visit to Las Vegas yesterday, in which he touched down. He went to visit some of the people still in the hospitals, and he went to a police command center. And I think he spent, you know, all told 4 or 5 hours on the ground and left. At least he didn't embarrass the nation yesterday. You know why? Because he stuck to the script that was put in front of him, pretty much. The one thing he did say when he was asked, he's asked about this.
Indication of a gun violence problem.
We're not going to talk about that today. We won't talk about that.
He doesn't want to talk about gun violence today because, you know, that goes to the talking points, those talking points that were leaked, to the press. And it's just too early to talk about gun violence. In fact, here's one of the talking points. The FBI, Justice Department, and Department of Homeland Security are working with local law enforcement officials to determine the facts surrounding this tragedy. And it wouldn't be appropriate to start having a political debate before we even know the facts. these were issued on Monday, less than 24 hours after local law enforcement and first responders arrived on the scene. And basically, same thing that Sarah Huckabee Sanders said today in the press briefing. Although, another topic, bump stocks, which most of us had never heard of before. Apparently, Hugh Hewitt interviewed Paul Ryan today for his Saturday morning MSNBC show, where Paul Ryan said he was open to looking into the issue of these bump stocks.
John Cornyn has said he wants to have hearings on bump stocks, yeah. Open to a vote. Are you open to a vote on bump stocks?
Yeah, I didn't even know what they were until this week, and I'm an avid sportsman. So I think we're quickly coming up to speed with what this is. Fully automatic weapons have been banned for a long time. Apparently, this allows you to take a semi-automatic, turn it into fully automatic. So clearly, that's something we need to look into.
Yeah, so that's what bump stocks are. They're aftermarket accessories, if you will, that through some loophole are legal to buy, and they are being bought and sold on the internet. And they will turn a semi-automatic gun, weapon, killing machine into a fully automatic machine. And apparently the shooter in Las Vegas had no less than five of these on different weapons that were found strewn about his hotel suite at Mandalay Bay. So now Sarah Huckabee Sanders, during today's White House press briefing, or as Laffy likes to call it, the lying session, said that regulating them is something that the White House is very open to. So, you know, it's nice to see, on the one hand, Republicans possibly stepping up and doing something about this one thing, but it's not enough. And they're going to talk about it as if they're moving heaven and earth, and oh my God, they're coming down on the side of, you know, of control of something that will make a difference. If we regulated these assault weapons, that could make a difference too. We could be talking about, let's see, what else? The shooting in general, which we spent the better part of this week on. Rex Tillerson and Moron Gate. Fucking moron. That's something that, you know, I've called the president that before. I find it certainly feasible, although Rex won't weigh in.
Could you address the main headline of this story, that you called the president a moron? And if not, where do you think these reports or
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place, but the places
you
I
are
come
now.
From, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense.
Oh.
And it is intended to do nothing but divide people. And I'm just not going to be part of this effort to divide this administration.
However, if he didn't say it, wouldn't you think he'd just come out and say he didn't say it? Now, something that was said, and I had this in yesterday's What's News update, when Trump was down in Puerto Rico, he was talking to Geraldo Rivera, and he made a comment about wiping out Puerto Rico's debt. Remember this?
To what extent do you commit to help rebuild this badder place?
Well, we're going to work something out. We have to look at their whole debt structure. You know, they owe a lot of money to your friends on Wall Street, and we're going to have to wipe that out. That's going to have to be, you know, you can say goodbye to that. I don't know if it's Goldman Sachs, but whoever it is, you can wave goodbye to that. We have to do something about, because the debt was massive on the island.
So he wants to wipe out Puerto Rico's $73 million debt or thereabouts. And what I said is, yeah, we'll see. Well, not so fast, because in the morning, yesterday morning, Mick Mulvaney was on CNN, and he's like, well, you know, don't believe what the president said.
The president seemed to suggest that he is open to wiping out the Puerto Rican debt. Is that to be taken seriously on its face?
I wouldn't take it word for word with that. I talked to the president about this at some length yesterday as we flew home on the...
I wouldn't take it word for word. In other words, no, don't believe what the president says, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Don't you feel great confidence in this administration? Not really. There's a lot more. There's the House passed the GOP budget today. We're going to talk about that with Howie Klein. The Children's Health Insurance Program expired last week, and there were supposedly negotiations underway that seem to have been sidelined. DACA, today is the deadline to reapply for DACA if you're a dreamer. There's another hurricane brewing in the Caribbean. There are no visitor logs from Mar-a-Lago. None. They just do not exist. So anybody who went to visit to see the president at Mar-a-Lago, we have no way of knowing. What else? Oh, Trump and fake news and his other tweets. He's been tweeting nonstop about fake news, alleging that NBC News just made up the story about Rex Tillerson, because that's what they're in the business of. Donald Trump talks about fake news, and he, you know, uses as his main news source Fox, which is the original home for fake news. You know that. And they do make shit up. And yet he's accusing other news organizations of just simply fabricating stories. That's something we could talk about for days on end. Then there's Jared and Ivanka's email problems. Elijah Cummings is now calling for an FBI review, seeing that they moved their private email addresses onto the Trump Organization's email server. After spending how long going after Hillary Clinton for using a private email server? Hypocrisy knows no bounds. Lots of stuff we could talk about. I'll tell you what, we're going to check in with the rest of the news. We've got Howie Klein coming up today because it is Thursday, so stick around.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Senator Dianne Feinstein unveiled a bill that bans bump stocks, devices that can be purchased online to make semi-automatic weapons fire more like automatic weapons. Some Republicans said such a ban would make sense, including Senator Ron Johnson, who told reporters, quote, "I have no problem banning those." Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut spoke with NBC's Hallie Jackson about it.
Is this an area where Congress is going to take action, and would you support that?
I am not only supporting it, I've joined in legislation which Senator Feinstein and I announced just literally moments ago that would ban bump stocks. These are the carnage force multipliers, the firing mechanisms that harness the recoil energy and make it possible to convert semi-automatics into automatic. Yes, we should ban them, and I think it's a point of common ground where we can come together in addition to others.
That was my next question. Have you spoken with Republicans about this? John Thune told me yesterday that Congress ought to take a look at some of these modifiers. Have you had discussions on the other side of the aisle?
Very good question. Yes. Informal discussions with some of my colleagues. And I think on this point of the bump stocks, there is receptiveness that I think is very, very significant.
The president on Wednesday went to Las Vegas, where he visited hospital bedsides and a police base, offering prayers and condolences to the victims of Sunday night's massacre, along with thanks to first responders, doctors, and hospitals.
This tremendous bravery. The police department, incredible. The people themselves, incredible. People leaving ambulances to have somebody else go because they thought they were hurt, even more so. The professionalism of the doctors and the medical staffs at this hospital and at other hospitals.
Back in D.C., Secretary of State Rex Tillerson held a short press conference to refute a story reported by NBC News. Jimmy Kimmel explains.
NBC News reported that during a cabinet meeting in July, the Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called President Trump a moron. According to the story, Trump drew a comparison between making the decision on how many troops to send to Afghanistan to what it was like to renovate a high-end New York restaurant. And after that, Tillerson was at a meeting with a bunch of high-ranking officials and referred to the president as a moron. By the way, if Trump is upset Rex Tillerson called him a moron, wait till he finds out what the rest of the country has been calling him.
Stephanie Ruhle was one of the reporters who broke the story, and she clarified.
My source didn't just say that he called him a moron. He said an effing moron. And think about, put it into context. This was after the president was talking about a strategy in Afghanistan, comparing it to the renovations of the 21 Club. But it also speaks to the fact that Rex Tillerson within the White House is kind of a man standing alone. While he is very close with General Mattis, and you saw Rex Tillerson say it, he talks to Mattis every day. Within the White House, there is a lot of bad blood. That's a guy who travels alone, who is a thin staff. We know He's had a very tense relationship in the past with Jared Kushner, and he hasn't made a lot of friends there. And, you know, note how he felt about the president's remarks at the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts mean everything to Rex Tillerson. His father ran the organization.
Right.
Rex Tillerson ran the organization. This year, they built a statue in Rex's honor.
The other thing NBC reported was that Tillerson had threatened to quit. He responded to that.
First, my commitment to the success of our president and our country is as strong as it was the day I accepted his offer to serve as Secretary of State. The vice president has never had to persuade me to remain as Secretary of State because I have never considered leaving this post. I think it's the most important element of the article is to reaffirm my commitment to this role that President Trump's asked me to serve. And to dispel with this notion that I have ever considered leaving. I have answered that question repeatedly. For some reason, it continues to be misreported. There's never been a consideration in my mind to leave. I serve at the appointment of the president, and I'm here for as long as the president feels I can be useful to achieving his objectives.
The leaders of the Senate Intelligence Committee gave a joint press conference on Wednesday with an interim report on their investigation, affirming the intelligence community's findings that Russia did interfere in the 2016 election and warning that we can expect more in the future. Chairman Richard Burr.
There are concerns that we continue to pursue. The committee continues to look into all evidence to see if there was any hint of collusion. Now, I'm not going to even discuss initial findings because we haven't any. We've got a tremendous amount of documents still to go through. And just to put in perspective, I said we've done over 100 interviews, over 250 hours. We currently have booked, for the balance of this month, 25 additional interviews. We have more work to do as it relates to collusion, but we're developing a clearer picture of what happened. What I will confirm is that the Russian intelligence service is determined, clever, and I recommend that every campaign and every election official take this very seriously as we move into this November's election and as we move into preparation for the 2018 election. I got
good news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution, as our work is 100% listener-funded. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right. For a little more on what's happening in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service. They're at TalkMediaNews.com. And Victoria Jones is on the line. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Nicole.
So there's some big news, I guess. I think the Washington Post breaking the news that Donald Trump is going to declare that the Iran nuclear deal is not in our country's best interest, huh?
Yes, he is going to do that. And he's going to give a speech likely on October the 12th. Why is my computer freezing? That is exactly what he's going to do. He's going to decertify the deal. So that means it goes to Congress, which doesn't want to have anything to do with it. And it could result in U.S. sanctions against Iran, and that basically would blow the deal up. Now, but he's not actually blowing the deal up himself. He's not actually going to come out next week and say, oh, I'm out of the deal. He's doing it in a more subtle way. They're also going to announce a tougher approach, a more comprehensive approach is what they're going to say to dealing with Iran. But he's not actually going to say, I want sanctions, I want to get out of the deal. He's not going to say that yet, apparently.
Well,
but it's all up in the air.
There are five other nations involved here. So for him to just do this unilaterally will really throw the world into more chaos, wouldn't it?
It would definitely complicate matters, particularly since, Iran has already come out and said, well, we're not open to renegotiating the deal. And from their point of view, why should they? They know perfectly well that any deal that President Trump wants to negotiate is not going to be in their interests. Why would they want to negotiate another deal with him?
Exactly. He can't just leave well enough alone, you know? He's got to mess with everything, as if there's not enough chaos in his administration as it is.
Well, there are a fair number of things going on. There's no question about that. And you know, it's been quite a lively day. That's obviously one of the things that's going on. Another of the things that's going on is, you know, House Republicans supporting possible legislation that would outlaw bump stocks. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders was holding the press briefing and being very circumspect in terms of saying whether the president would support that, and just sort of saying, well, you know, have a conversation, when it came across everybody's phones that the NRA would support it. But she still wouldn't commit to the idea that if the NRA is supporting it, that, you know, is indicating that it's something that it could support, that the president could support it.
Well, the NRA only contributed, what, $30 million to his campaign. I would think that he'd go along with whatever they want.
I think that she was caught off guard. And it was very interesting. It was a quick briefing. She was like, I'm only taking one question from everybody. I'm going to go all the way around. I'll say a question from everybody. And the notification that popped up on all our phones from the Washington Post about the Iran deal, from what I could tell, when I looked at my phone, it seemed that she abruptly left the briefing. It should have finished. I'm going. And it was a quick briefing. A lot of her briefings are. But I just thought that she got out of there just before the notification popped up that she knew that this story was about to break, and she didn't want to be there when it broke.
Huh.
Now, I don't know that. I'm attributing motives to her. But she certainly got out of there before the story broke.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Although it could have just been her wanting to get out of there.
Well, there's that.
Right. All right. What else is going on?
There are some other things going on as well. The White House is close to sending a proposal to Congress that would demand strict immigration measures in exchange for helping people enrolled in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. So it would be a quid pro quo. Now, the plan would cut legal immigration in half over the next decade and dramatically ramp up punishments for immigrants living illegally in the U.S., according to a source familiar with the proposal. And it was drafted by senior policy advisor Stephen Miller.
Of course it was. Why am I not surprised to hear that?
Now, Democrats have really rejected proposals like this in the past, and slashing legal immigration levels by a half is, you know, a lot of Republicans are not going to support that either. I mean, it's just, you know, now what's interesting is, as you know, there was a deal that looked like it was coming forward when Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi hammered out a framework of a proposal during a dinner with Trump. So, you know, we know that Miller is a staunch opponent of the DACA program. He was reportedly upset when Trump decided to pursue a deal with the Democratic leaders.
And so now he put this together, and this is burner, huh?
Well, it hasn't taken it yet, but this is a draft plan. Now, what it also does is the plan contains elements of something called the Davis-Oliver bill, which is a sweeping enforcement bill that would criminalize people in the U.S. without legal status.
Wow.
It also changes the way that people will come in. It changes it from a family system to a merit system. And so that's another major system, and Democrats object to eliminating family-based visa preferences. So this is going to be really very controversial. It also includes billions of dollars to fund new border security measures, immigration detention beds, and immigration judges.
Does that include, I read somewhere that the House approved $10 billion for the wall. Is that part of this?
That's a separate thing.
Ah.
But apparently the House, either a House a panel did. I think it was a House panel.
Okay. Unreal. Oh. Unreal.
Yes.
The House budget.
Yes, that happened.
The Republicans' budget passed the House today with no Democratic votes and only a handful of.
I'm sorry? Yes. And I printed it out and I can't find it now. I don't know where it's gone, so I can't speak very intelligently about it, but it did pass, and that's it paves the way if things continue according to plan as the Republicans see it for tax reform. Now, I mean, Democrats are livid with this budget because they say it contains a lot of stealth cuts, Senate Republicans. Senate Democrats, they say the same thing. In fact, the House cuts are not so stealthy. They are far more spelled out, in fact. But it's the Senate cuts that are the ones that the Democrats in the Senate are saying, look, we know they've got these massive cuts, but they don't say what they're for.
Right, but the Senate Democrats are saying it would slash Medicare spending by $473 billion over a decade and require $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid. Those are some pretty big cuts. Now, but we don't know where the Senate, the Democrats are getting those numbers from because the Senate Republicans haven't spelled it out yet.
Right, exactly. We don't know. But, they're going to cut something. We
right.
just don't know what.
Oh, okay.
They're going to cut something.
Right. Yeah, they're going to cut a lot of things.
Yeah, they're going to cut several things. I mean, you can cut a lot of things with that much money.
No kidding. Right.
Yeah.
So this week, there's a separate Senate budget from the House budget. The House budget that passed the House today. The Senate does their own thing, and then they conference them. And do you think they'll pass a budget?
It wouldn't surprise me if they do. They really, really, really want to. Because they want to move on to tax reform.
Right. And the tax reform bill is, well, there's no bill yet. There's just really that 9-page outline. There is no legislation written yet.
No, there's no legislation written yet. Now, the Senate Budget Committee is working on its budget right now. They look like they're going to finish today on a resolution, and it's going to be more focused on the tax legislation than the House version was. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. There will be quite a lot of reconciling to do. But even when they get to tax reform, you know, we still don't know. They say, okay, so deductions. They're going to get rid of a lot of deductions because of this. Well, it's always been one of the problems doing tax reform is when they start saying, well, you can't get a deduction for this, you can't get a deduction for that. And that's when lawmakers have started getting up on their hind legs and saying, oh, well, my constituents won't stand for that.
Right. And already the provision that you couldn't deduct your state and city taxes from your federal tax return, that already got so much pushback that they've pulled it, if I'm reading it correctly.
I'm not sure. I haven't followed it closely enough because I've been overtaken by some other things. But, there are all kinds of things. I mean, they could get tripped up on any number of things that might seem small, but that suddenly somebody will go, oh, no, that's not going to wash.
Right.
You know?
And we have a number of more, moderate senators who are saying, I'm not running next time. I'm retiring after my term is up, who might throw a wrench in this process,
That's possible.
Yes.
That's very possible. Yeah. Another story. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is reversing course on the Justice Department's policy that the 1964 Civil Rights Law protects transgender individuals from discrimination.
Unbelievable.
So there's a memo to U.S. attorneys dated Wednesday that BuzzFeed got hold of. And Sessions says that the Justice Department will no longer interpret Title VII of the Civil Rights Act to mean that the law's protections extend to discrimination based on gender identity.
Oh, my God.
And the memo says that it encompasses discrimination between men and women but does not encompass discrimination based on gender identity per se, including transgender status. Sessions wrote it's the responsibility of the Justice Department to interpret the law, quote, as written by Congress, and that the existing text does not explicitly prohibit discrimination based on gender identity. And Sessions said that position will apply to, quote, all pending and future matters.
Oh, my God. You know, let me just say, because I'm not one to mince words, that he is a hateful piece of shit. That's a quote from me.
Okay.
Yeah. Horrible. Unbelievable. And yet, you know, we don't want the president to fire him because he could bring in somebody who potentially would, you know, not recuse himself from the Russia investigation and could potentially fire Robert Mueller. This is how twisted into pretzels we are. I am.
Well, that is a very valid point.
Yeah, I know.
That could happen. Yeah.
Just like, you know, Rex Tillerson, as horrible as he is as a Secretary of State, if he's to leave, Trump could bring in someone worse. It's like Tom Price. I'm hearing rumors that, you know, Rick Santorum could be in the running to replace Tom Price as Secretary of Health and Human Services. You know, he's the one who came up with the idea for the Graham Cassidy bill.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's, you know, like the devil you know. And with the Trump administration, as bad as things are, they can always be worse.
Well, then there was the tweet this morning.
Which one?
The one at 6:59 a.m.
That said?
Why isn't the Senate Intel Committee looking into the fake news networks in our country to see why so much of our news is just made up? Fake!
Right. So this is a guy who gets his news, his intelligence briefings, if you will, using that pointedly there, from Fox, who does make up news, and then accuses, you know, NBC News of just fabricating the entire Tillerson story. It's opposite world. We are in this alternate universe where just nothing makes sense. Victoria Jones of the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. As always, thank you, Victoria.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. We got Howie Klein coming up next. Don't go away. It's Nicole Sandler at nicolesandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good.
Good. So the House Democrats, the House Republicans passed their budget earlier today. Now, the good news is that all the Democrats voted against it. But before the House Republicans brought up their budget, there were some replacement budgets that were offered up, including the budget, the people's budget that's always put forth every year by the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And that was defeated 314 to 108. Why were so few Democrats voting in favor of this, the budget, the one budget that makes a lot of sense?
Right. Well, there were five offered altogether. So it was the Congressional Black Caucus offered a budget.
Right.
And the Congressional Progressive Caucus offered a budget, which is the one you just referred to as the people's budget. That's what they call it. Then also the radical right you know, sort of the fascist wing of the Republican Party offered a budget,
right,
which was also defeated. And then the Democratic Party, the official Democratic Party, offered a budget that was defeated. And then the normal Republican budget was very, very narrowly passed because every Democrat voted against it. And I think there were 18 Republicans that voted against it as well. Most of those Republicans who voted against it are in swing districts, and they fear that if they would have voted for something this radical, which it is really radical, they would be defeated. So quite a few, you know, Republicans in like suburban areas of New Jersey and Connecticut, those are the ones who voted no. Like, I don't mean Connecticut, I'm sorry, there are no Republicans in Connecticut in office, in congressional office. I meant Philadelphia, the Philadelphia suburbs, there are three Republicans in those suburbs, they all voted no. But the to get back to your question, the progressive budget is a really visionary kind of budget that it really shows what the priorities of the country would be, and these are really the priorities that the American people have accepted. I mean, polling shows over and over again that this is what they want. It's a budget that invests very, very heavily in infrastructure, in education, mm-hmm. in healthcare. It's a very, very, very strong budget. In fact, I thought it was the best one that the Progressive Caucus had ever put out.
Yeah,
And they did get a lot of votes, by the way. They over 100. It was a majority of the Democratic Party, but 79 Democrats voted against it.
Wow.
So you ask why? So you if you look at the list, there were a couple of people who on there who should have voted for it, who didn't, but just two or three or four. But when you look at that list of 79, it's pretty much all of the blue dogs, all of the blue dogs, and almost all of the new Dems.
Right.
Maybe there were a couple of new Dems, maybe one or two frightened blue dogs who voted for it. But generally speaking, the Republican wing of the Democratic Party voted against it. So people sometimes say, what is that Republican wing of the Democratic Party? I never heard of that. Well, that's not like an official organization.
Right.
Like the Blue Dogs is an organization. Mm-hmm. The New Dems is an organization. They have officers that are elected, that you have to pay dues, you have to be invited to join or apply to join, and there's a formal membership procedure. So those are – like when people say, well, he's a Blue Dog. Well, there are 18 of them. That's it.
That's all.
Someone wrote to me today, well, I know that Joe Manchin is a blue dog, but who are the others? Well, the fact of the matter is Joe Manchin is not a blue dog. You may describe him as a blue dog type,
right,
or someone who has a blue dog outlook. But a blue dog, the way I use the word at least, is someone who is a member of the Blue Dog Caucus.
In the House of Representatives, right?
In the House. Representative. That's right.
Right. And Joe Manchin is a senator. So he, by definition, right, can't be in the House caucus.
He has the same philosophy or a similar philosophy as the Blue Dogs, generally speaking. He's a little bit more populist than most of the Blue Dogs, believe it or not. So sometimes this is going to sound really strange to people, but sometimes he and Elizabeth Warren can get together on certain kinds of economic legislation. I know that sounds hard to believe, but it actually happens. They I think the two of them like each other.
Wow.
And they sometimes work together.
Politics makes strange bedfellows, you know. Sometimes stranger things have happened even, so.
But the people who voted against the progressive budget last night were, generally speaking, the Republican wing of the Democratic Party, the Blue Dogs and the New Dems, and the people who vote with them all the time. And people say, well, what is that? Where did it come from? Who is that? And it for me, at least, it goes back to a phrase that Paul Wellstone used to use. He used to say the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. Howard Dean picked up on that when he was running for president and helped to popularize it. So if there's a Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, you could infer from that that there's a Republican wing of the Democratic Party, and that is what conservatives are. In fact, I was just sitting and writing a little essay, very short essay, because I had lunch, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? I think it was yesterday. I had lunch with one of the most powerful Democrats in California, and he asked me to keep it as to keep it confidential so that he could speak freely, and I agreed. And so I'm not going to say who it was.
Okay.
But he was, you know, this is a guy who's not used to being interrupted, I will tell you. He's one of the most powerful guys, most powerful political leaders in the state of California. And he's referring to these very, very, very conservative and also very corrupt Democrats in Sacramento in the legislature. And he kept referring to them as the moderates and the mods. He kept saying that. And finally, I just couldn't take it anymore, and I interrupted him. And he looked at me like he was like he'd never been interrupted before. He couldn't believe that someone was interrupting him. And I said, if you keep – because he's a very, very progressive guy. And I said, if you keep referring to these conservatives, these corrupt conservatives, as moderate, which is a term that people love. People consider themselves – everyone thinks of themselves as a moderate.
Right.
And if you keep calling these conservatives moderates, what does that make you? What does that make your ideas? Everything that you've been fighting for in your whole career, what is that? Is it radical? Is it extreme? I mean, that's the opposite of moderate. And he went from this look of annoyance on his face about being interrupted to like this light bulb went off over his head, and he loved it.
Wow.
And I'll for the rest of the day that we spent together, I never heard him refer to them any other way as except as conservatives.
Oh, good.
I think he should have learned something.
Good.
But that's really what it is that the media, the Beltway media, has very, with great alacrity, has born into this idea of calling these conservatives blue
moderates.
Dogs and new Dems, of calling them moderates.
Yeah.
And then what is Ted Lieu? What is he, a radical? Is he extremist? What's Ro Khanna? I mean, to me, and not just to me, but if you look at any polling, it'll tell you that people, they love the vision that progressives are offering. If you look at the actual polling, the progressive vision is always people who consider themselves independents plus people who consider themselves Democrats. That adds up to the numbers that approve of the progressive policy agenda.
Right.
That's the moderate. Those are the moderates.
You would think. But, now, I'm looking on your list, and it's downwithtyranny.com, and it's the most recent post you have up there, which deals with the blue dogs here, and it has the list of the 79 so-called Democrats who voted against the Progressive Caucus budget, the people's budget. And I notice my congressman is on there. That's Ted Deutch. Now, I see he's not a blue dog, and he's not a new Dem. And on some things he's good, but this disgusts me, frankly, that he voted against this.
You should let him know.
I will. I absolutely will.
I mean, they generally don't know. They don't seem to think that people pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
They get away with this kind of thing, and you know that their constituents don't notice it. But he's a moderate.
Right. He is a moderate.
You know, he's not a blue dog. He's not a new Dem. He's kind of a moderate Democrat in the real sense of the word moderate. But I wouldn't let him get away with it without hearing from you. And I think everybody should take a look at that list. And if their Congress member is on it, and they don't agree, they should let them know. I mean, it makes a difference. I mean, there were a number of people who voted for it who are just frightened of primaries. And, you know, people who never voted for it, but like Tulsi Gabbard, for example.
Right.
She's not afraid of a primary, but she has different objectives. She's never voted for the progressive budget before. It comes up every year. She always votes against it. This year she voted for it. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not a progressive by any stretch of the imagination,
uh-huh.
But she's so frightened of Tim Canova, who's primarying her again, that she voted for it. I mean,
wow.
It's absurd. She's a new Dem. She's quite conservative. She's quite corrupt. The special interests that she serves would flip out if they thought there was any chance of this thing passing and that she was part of it. But she's too frightened of her own constituents, scared that Tim Canova is holding her feet to the fire and keeping her accountable. So therefore, she voted for it. which is odd. And there were a number of conservative Democrats who were just figured, hey, it's not going to matter, it's not going to pass anyway, and this way I won't be bothered by my damn constituents yelling about it.
Wow.
I listed some of them. There were others aside from Wasserman Schultz, who I just had a laugh when I saw their names on a list of people supporting anything progressive at all.
Right. That is a disconnect. Tulsi Gabbard is an interesting study because she, you know, because of her embracing of Bernie Sanders, a lot of people think that she is a real progressive without having looked into her record, where, you know, I learned from you that she's no progressive at all. But she glommed on to Bernie, and Bernie embraced her.
Yes, and a lot of Bernie followers have embraced her as well. And in the last year, she's radically changed the way she votes.
Really?
Yes. She is definitely someone who is voting in a more progressive way, but it wasn't like some kind of a gradual change. It was like, you know, night and day. Like she made a decision, I think, that, and other people in Hawaii who know her well think that her approach to her career and her future is not going to be what she thought it would be. She always thought it was going to be being a conservative. Her time in the state legislature, she was an ultra conservative. She was, you know, she wasn't just someone who was anti-gay. She was literally the leader of the anti-gay movement. She would never do something like that today. But why? Has she really changed her stripes, or is it just a tactic for her? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know either. Yeah.
You know, the one conversation I ever had with her, you know, she called me up. She asked me if to consider an endorsement of her when she was running for Congress. And I said, why don't we talk? And we started talking. It was an amicable conversation. And as soon as I asked her about her role in and I asked in a very, very nice way. I didn't not accusatory or anything. I asked her about her role in the marriage equality struggle in Hawaii. She said, oh, I have to go now. I'll call you back. And I've never spoken to her again.
Wow.
She hung up and never called back and never communicated in any other way, except sometimes some of the people who are associated with her write nasty notes on my blog. But anyway, so I mean, she's a complicated figure. I don't know her well enough to be able to make a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather not. You know, I to some extent I trust some of the people who were telling me that, you know, that I've got her wrong. I don't have her record wrong. I know what that is. A lot of my friends in Hawaii politics tell me I don't have her wrong. I have her very right, and she's what my grandmother would call a no good Nick.
Right. Okay. You know, you talked about the Blue Dogs and how there are only 18 of them left. The Blue Dogs pretty much got decimated in 2018, but the new Dems. I mean, in 2010. Sorry, I got ahead of myself there. I'd like to see them decimated in 2018 in favor of progressives. But there are a lot more new Dems. The new Democratic caucus seems to be growing. In fact, there's a name on here.
Almost all of the Blue Dogs, I think there's only one or two exceptions. Almost all of the Blue Dogs are in the new Dems as well.
Oh, wow. So they've just sort of reconstituted there. One that I'm really surprised is Beto O'Rourke, because I remember he was a Blue America candidate for the House. Now he's running for the Senate. He's challenging Ted Cruz. And I always thought, you know, he was one of the good guys, but have him here.
He normally doesn't vote with them. He does sometimes, but normally he's not a new Dem voter. I asked him, I called him up and I said, what is it with you? Why did you join the new Dems? And he said, oh, you know, it's just a lunch. And it's an interesting conversation. And I, you know, hear that side of things. And, you know, I find the company amicable. And So, you know, he gave me a line about it. If I would have called him out, it would have been on a voting record, but I couldn't because his voting record wasn't that bad.
Uh-huh.
Like when you see all the New Dems lining up to vote one way, you don't find Beto in that group.
Right.
Although he did vote against the Progressive Caucus, the Progressive Caucus budget. So you know, look, no one's perfect.
Nope.
Overall, Beto's pretty good.
Good. And I mean, it's a long shot for him to unseat Ted Cruz, but I'm glad he's in the running. But that means that he'll lose his House seat.
Well, yeah. Well, he's a term limits guy. So he told me he doesn't want – when he first ran for Congress, we supported him. I don't know if you know this or not, he's a musician and
yes.
He's a punk rocker, more like an emo rocker.
Uh-huh.
He told me he was going to only stay in the House for like two or three terms. He
uh-huh.
didn't want to make a career out of that. And he's lived up to it. So he could have, you know, he has a very, very safe seat. It's, you know, there literally no Republican could win that seat. And everyone likes him in El Paso. He's very, very popular. And he could have had that seat for as long as he wanted. But he felt like, you know, he promised he was going to apply term limits to himself.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to keep that promise. And there was no one stepping up to take on Ted Cruz who would be able to, you know, put together a viable campaign. And he decided he would do it.
Good.
And I admire that. You know, it's a very uphill battle. No one thinks he really has much of a chance, but you know, he's doing it a very different way. He's not taking any PAC money. He's running a very, very grassroots campaign. He's spending all of the time that he's not in the House on the road, going to towns that haven't seen Democrats in years. So he's not just you know, running in Austin and Houston and Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
He's running in every little town where they used to have Democrats, but Democrats don't even bother anymore.
Right.
And he's going to them. And
good.
I'm hearing great stuff. I'm hearing stuff all the time. I'm reading local newspapers that are giving him great reviews. And, you know, I'm not going to predict that this guy's going to win, but he's certainly giving Ted Cruz a little bit of a scare. And we'll see. I mean, 2018 is going to be a very, very big year for Democrats. There's going to be a big wave. I was just reading another poll this morning that USA Today put out by Suffolk. And, you know, the guy who writes the poll was astounded. He said the Republican Party is just collapsing in terms of what people think of them. And he was saying, you know, in March it was, you know, there were, you know, 48% of people didn't like them. And in June it went up to 55% of people not liking them. And it's now in the 60s, approaching the 70s. People are just hating them, and that is, you know, that's going to affect people like Ted Cruz when they run for re-election. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, it'll take a few more months before I can say to you, yes, Beto is going to win this thing.
Right.
Right.
Well,
now, I'm hoping he does.
Will Blue America get into endorsing senatorial candidates? I know when you started Blue America, it was focused solely on House races. And then you did endorse some Senate candidates. So is Beto one that you will get behind?
Yes.
Great.
You know, basically what we're trying to focus our energy on saving some of the real progressives in some of the states that that Trump won. So Tammy Baldwin,
mm-hmm.
I would say, is probably our number one priority.
Right.
Because Trump went in Wisconsin, and Tammy's an incredible progressive. And she's the kind of candidate who is, you know, she's courageous, she is incorruptible,
mm-hmm.
and she's the perfect Blue America candidate, and we've endorsed her over and over again for her whole career, and that's really our priority is those kind of people. Not that there are so many of those kind of people, unfortunately, but yes, we're also backing Beto.
Great, Good to know. I'm looking more at this post. It's Blue Dogs urge Ryan to ignore Pelosi and negotiate with them instead. That's a pretty heinous headline. So the Blue Dogs are saying to Speaker Paul Ryan that he should negotiate with them on this tax deal, that they'd be willing to cross over and vote for this heinous tax plan that they're pushing.
Well, they want a role in writing it. So none of the Blue Dogs voted today for the Republican bill. They voted against the progressive bill, but they didn't vote for the for this silliness that Ryan put out today. What Ryan put out today is just unconscionable. It is so extreme and it's murderous. It would mean millions of poor people being consigned to brutish lives, period. I mean, it is literally meant to destroy Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. That's the underlying purpose of the bill. So you say, well, how does the tax bill do that? It does that by depleting the budget so much that within 10 years, Congress will have no choice except to start drastically cutting back on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
Wow.
So that's what Ryan wanted. That was the purpose. So it doesn't say that in the bill. When you add the math, it proves it, that it will do that. Trillions of dollars would taken right out of the budget. Well, you know, somewhere along the line, those trillions of dollars are going to have to be made up. And how are they going to be made up? Well, either you shut down the military, and that ain't going to ever happen.
Nope.
Or you start cutting back on essential services like Social Security and Medicare.
Unbelievable.
Which is exactly what the Republicans want. That's what they've always wanted. They fought it, and they fought it when it was proposed, and they're still fighting it to this day. They'll never give up. They'll never give up, which is why voters have to decimate them in 2018, have to just squash them. I mean, starting with Paul Ryan. Just end his career. And, you know, every poll that I see shows that that's exactly what's going to happen.
And in general, but how are things looking with Iron Stash, Randy Bryce's campaign against Paul Ryan?
Yes, the things are looking great.
I mean, really,
you know, as long as this guy can get his message out, as long as he is, you know, he's got access to free media, which he does. And he's raising enough money to go up against Ryan. He's never going to be able to match Ryan. I mean, Ryan is going to spend 20 times more than what he spends. But what I'm going to say now is not official yet. And the reason it's not official is because it isn't until October 17th, so another less than 2 weeks, mm-hmm. that everybody's report their how much money they brought in for the quarter. But it looks from the early reports and from what I've finding out from other campaigns, it looks like Randy Bryce has raised more money than any other campaign in the country,
wow.
any other congressional campaign.
Wow.
Bar none.
Wow.
So, like I said, Ryan is going to outspend him 20-1, but it doesn't matter. That really doesn't matter. And I'm serious about that. I've done some very, very serious research into this. When there are wave elections, you can spend 20 times more than your opponent. You're going to get beaten anyway. Now, if Randy Bryce didn't have enough money to get on TV and to get his message out, he would lose. But he raised over $1 million in this last quarter. I don't know the exact amount, but it's over $1 million. I do know that. And that's enough to be able to compete successfully.
That's great
news.
Doesn't mean
you have to match them dollar for dollar. Doesn't make any. You know what I think of the DCCC. I hate them, but they just did an ad that is so incredible. I have it going up on my blog sometime today. I think this evening. It's an anti-Paul Ryan ad, and they turn the tables on Paul Ryan. What the Republicans have been doing to slander and destroy Nancy Pelosi, they are finally doing the same thing to Paul Ryan. It's going to work, and that they're going to spend about $500,000 initially getting that ad up, not just in Wisconsin, where they are spending a lot of money on it, but all over the country.
Wow.
The idea is they are going to tie every candidate in the country, every Republican running for re-election, to Paul Ryan. just the way the Republicans have done with Nancy
Pelosi. I love it. I'll keep an eye out for that. We'll find it at downwithtyranny.com. Howie Klein, we are out of time. As always, thank you.
Nice to talk to you. Talk to you next week.
You too. Okay, bye-bye. Howie Klein with us here on the Nicole Sandler Show. And we are out of time. So tomorrow we close out the week with Stephanie Kelton. We'll talk about modern monetary theory. Until then, thanks for listening.